when someone tapped him on the shoulder.
Hey, Vanasek, grab your weapons and go to the mess hall. They're doing an inventory today. Tell everyone you see. I've got to go get Cortez and what's-his-name from the detention center, then wake up last night's shift.
It was Nelson, his supervisor. Hearing Cortez's name, he reacted quickly.
You get the rest of the guys up. I'll get Cortez for you.
Nelson gave him a thumbs up.
Thanks.
It was now or never. With everyone lining up for the inventory, it was the perfect opportunity to enact the plan. He ran into his room and grabbed the pack that was sitting on his bunk and headed back to the motor pool. The place was deserted. He tossed his pack into the truck and went to the locker and began moving supplies. He took all the MREs that were there, as well as a saw and several cans of ammo. Ammo for the carbine came next, then the first aid bag, sleeping bags, and a small tent. He went around to the rest of the trucks and pulled the fuel cans off them, tossing them into the back of his truck. The Hummer was filling up fast. Deciding he had enough, he got behind the wheel of the truck, pulled the red tag off the dashboard, and started it, heading for the kitchen. He saw Kay inside when he stuck his head through the door. Taking a quick look around to make sure no one was there, he called out,
"Kay!"
in a loud whisper. When she looked over, he said,
"It's time!"
Kay nodded and picked up a small blue duffel bag, quickly making her way outside and into the passenger side of the truck. Neither of them said anything as Eric steered the truck toward the detention center.
"Hop out here. If this doesn't work, I don't want you sitting in this thing if other people show up. Just watch the door. I'll come out and wave when we're ready."
Kay nodded and got out of the truck.
"Good luck, hon,"
she whispered. Fred didn't pay any attention when the door to the cell block opened. She didn't even take much notice when her cell door opened. It was what didn't happen that caught her attention. No jingling keys, no blinding light. Fred opened her eyes and could make out two men standing in the door. One of the men stepped in and grabbed her arm, pulling her to her feet. He led her out of the cell and up to the small desk that sat in front of the block. The other man threw something at her. She made no attempt to catch it, letting it hit her and fall to the floor. Looking down, she saw it was clothes, her clothes, the one she had on when she arrived at the camp.
"Put them on. No sense in ruining our stuff," one of them said.
Fred looked around for a place to change.
"Don't worry about that. Just do it here," the man said.
Fred had accepted her fate. There was nothing she could do at this point, so the request had little effect on her. She took off the smock and slipped the pants off. She was wearing the underwear and bra issued by the camp and knelt down to pick up her clothes.
"No, no, sweetheart, all of it," the man said.
It was then she knew what would happen next. A tear began to roll down her cheek as she pulled the bra over her head.
"Damn. They look better without anything covering them up," one of them said.
As Fred pulled the underwear off, one of the men stepped forward, and as they slipped off her foot, he grabbed her arm.
"No sense in letting something that looks this good go to waste."
"Put her on the desk," the other man said, as he unbuckled his belt.
Thoughts of what happened to Jess flooded through Fred's mind.
"This is it. This is how it's going to end. This can't be happening. This can't be real."
As one of the men pushed her toward the desk, her mind began to race.
"How can I get out of here?"
Chapter 18. I took the first watch after dinner and brought my RWS air rifle out with me, hoping to see a rabbit. I remember when I was young, my dad, uncle and I would hunt them at night with a light. This wasn't sport hunting. We needed it. There were times those rabbits made a difference, so tonight I'd use the same tactic to try and bag a bunny. I kept the fire low
and sat on top of the picnic table, periodically shining my light around the open area between the cabins and the river. At about 10, I saw the first set of eyes. Raising the rifle while holding the light on it, I looked through the scope. I could clearly see it and centered the crosshairs on one of the eyes and pulled the trigger. The rabbit flipped and hit the ground. There are two kinds of rabbits in Florida, cottontail, which I had gotten here, and what we call swamp rabbits. Taking this cottontail back over to the table, I quickly skinned it out and gutted it, saving the entrails for the dogs and tossing the hide into the woods. With one in the bag, I was now motivated to find another and started actively looking. Slipping around the perimeter of the camp, I kept close watch on the area where the clearing met the brush. By midnight, I'd bagged two more and decided I'd had enough. I went over and woke up Danny to take his turn and told him about the rabbits. "Nice, man," Danny said, looking at the three skinned bunnies lying on the table. "Yeah, they'll be good for breakfast," I said. "Sure will. Go on, dude, I've got this." I slapped him on the back and headed for my cabin. I managed to find my way in without a light and was quickly in my bag. Sleep came almost instantly, a heavy, dreamless sleep. In the before, I often joked about this kind of sleep, calling it the darted rhino sleep. I got it from one of those wildlife shows where they were darting white rhinos in Africa. Seeing how they acted as the drug took hold, I remembered thinking, I felt like that before. It became a running joke in my family. What seemed like moments later, I was awakened by little feet dancing around my sleeping bag. "Wake up, Rhino," Little Bit said, giggling. "Breakfast is ready." I headed out for breakfast and joined the others. As we ate the rabbits, I was deep in thought, remembering what Chase had said about the lemon tree. It would be great to have citrus, but I didn't know any of the lemon trees around here. Everyone thinks Florida is covered in citrus trees, but that's not the case. The area we lived in was in the northern limit of their range. Suddenly, something hit me. "There's a tangerine tree upriver," I said, out of nowhere. Everyone stopped eating and stared at me. Looking at Danny, I said, "Remember that tangerine tree we found on the opposite side of the river up there?" Danny chewed his grits for a moment. "Oh, yeah. Had those sour tangerines." "Yeah, that's the one. I want to go find it today. I totally forgot about it." "Sounds good to me," Danny said. Then, looking around the table, added, "Anyone else want to go?" "What are we going to do with sour tangerines?" Jeff asked. "Don't knock it. We could use the vitamins," I said. "We could make jelly," Bobby said. "I know how to make marmalade," Thad said. Everyone now looked at Thad. "You're just full of surprises," Mel said. Thad smiled. "I know a thing or two."
"I want some marmalade," Little Bit said, doing her best to say the word. "Can I go with you, Daddy?"
"Sure, I don't mind. We're going to take a canoe." "I'm not going in any canoe. I'll take the kayak," Mel said. "Yeah, I wouldn't want you in one either. It's still too cold to go swimming," I said with a laugh. Mel was famous for her ability to turn over a canoe. I couldn't even count the number of times she's turned one over at the launch, before we'd even begun a trip.
"I'll kayak too," Bobby said. "Aw, I wanted to take a kayak," Taylor said.
"Sorry, kid, you're riding with us," I told her, then looked at Leanne. "You want to go?" She was picking at her grits with a spoon and barely looked up. To my surprise, this time, she actually answered me.
"No, I'll stay here."
Mel shot me a look, but I shrugged. We couldn't force her to go. Noticing there was a bit of tension in the air, Jeff jumped in.
"I'll stay here. Got a couple of things I want to work on today. Plus, you know how I am with canoes," he said, getting a chuckle from us.
"I'll stay too."
I'm going to get some more swamp cabbage for the pigs. I want to make sure all them little ones will make it, Thad said.
Well, when are we going? Bobby asked.
As soon as I finish this rabbit, I said. Yeah, it's good. Nice job, Thad said, holding up a leg.
I haven't had rabbit in a long time. I don't remember it being this good, Bobby said.
Hunger is a way of changing your perspective on food, doesn't it? We need to keep our eyes open for them from now on, I said.
Absolutely, Danny said, as he sucked on a bone.
After we finished up, those who were going on the tangerine hunt headed for the boats. Mel and Bobby got in the kayaks, while Danny, Taylor, Little Bit, and I got in the canoe. I took the bow seat, and Danny got in the stern. The morning was cool, and the water like glass. I watched the eelgrass sway in the current as we passed over it. Red-eared slider turtles sunned themselves on downed trees, looking comical with their feet held up in the air. Mel and Bobby were on the opposite side of the river, gliding past the low-hanging oaks on that side. It brought a smile to my face. It seemed just like a normal paddle down the river. Little Bit was hanging over the side, grabbing at the passing lilies. She latched onto something, and I felt the boat tug.
Hey, let go, don't do that, or you'll get pulled out of the boat, I warned.
There was a little pop, and she pulled a slender green stem into the boat.
Look, Dad.
She was holding a seed head of the yellow pond lily. It was a small bell-shaped pod containing a number of seeds. I was surprised to see it this early in the season.
Can we take them back and pop them?
Little Bit asked. I smiled. That was something we did for fun in the before. We'd strip the flesh off and separate the seeds and put them in a hot skillet. They'd pop. And though they weren't as good as popcorn, they had an interesting likeness to them.
Keep your eyes open for more, I told her.
She smiled and looked back to the river for the next one.
We maneuvered the canoe over to the edge of the river to get into a patch of lilies. Feeling the canoe tip, I looked back to see Danny pulling something out of the water. He held up a large apple snail.
Check it out. Oh, let me have it, Little Bit said, holding her hand out.
I looked over into the water.
See any more?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, me too. Let's collect them, I said.
We spent the next 15 or so minutes collecting snails. Little Bit piled them all in the bottom of the boat. Even Taylor helped, plucking several from the weeds in the slow-moving water.
What are you going to do with these? Taylor asked.
Eat 'em, I said.
Ew, I'm not going to, Little Bit said. Are they good? Taylor asked.
I don't know, never had them, but I know they're edible. We'll have to try them out, I said.
We're getting all kinds of stuff, Little Bit exclaimed, holding a handful of snails and seed pods.
Let's see what else we can find, I said, as I pushed the bow of the boat out into the current.
Mel and Bobby were ahead of us, in the middle of the river, where it opened up and the current slowed. They were sitting there, talking, waiting on us. As we glided up, Mel pointed toward the trees.
Is that your tangerine tree? She asked.
We moved the boat toward them. From there, we could see the top of the tree, its orange fruits shining in the sun.
Yep, that's it. It's late in the season for them, but let's go see what they look like, I said, as we paddled.
It was a bit of an event getting everyone out of their boats. We had to pull the kayaks up onto the bank so the girls could get out of them without tipping. Once everyone was on dry land, we checked out the tree. The only fruit still on it was high up in the top. Naturally, Little Bit volunteered to climb up.
No, you stay here. Dad will figure something out, Mel said.
I looked at her.
Let her climb it. It's a tree. She's a kid. That's what kids do.
While not thrilled with the idea, she relented, and Danny helped Ashley into the tree. Of course, as soon as she was in it,
She got scared.
"Go on up and pick some, kiddo," I said.
"I can't, Daddy. Can I come down?" she asked, panicked.
"Yeah, come on," I said, as I reached for her and set her on the ground.
"Now what? How are you going to get them down?" Bobby asked.
"Let's see what we can find," Danny said, scanning the woods.
I moved off the shoreline to look as well. There was a decent trail, and I started walking down it, looking for something long to reach up into the top of the tree.
"Hey, Morg!" Danny called.
I walked back down the trail toward him and saw him waving a long limb. As I got closer, he held out a handful of tangerine peels.
"How was it?" I asked.
"Don't know, because I didn't eat any. I found these peels on the ground."
"Hmm, that may not be a good sign."
"Yeah, well, look at this," he said, as he turned and started to walk.
He stopped at a wide portion of the trail that was littered with an assortment of trash.
"Looks like someone's been camping here," I said.
"Yeah, and I found this."
He handed me a spent shotgun shell.
"Someone must be moving up and down this side of the river. Could be our friends who visited the other day," I said.
"Looks that way. Let's go get some fruit and get out of here."
"All right, don't say anything to the girls right now. They'll probably get scared and want to leave. You go after the fruit, and I'll keep an eye out," I said.
Little Bit and Taylor occupied their time collecting more snails in the slack currents by the bank. Mel and Bobby were sitting in the sun, relaxing and chatting. It almost felt like normal times for a moment. Meanwhile, Danny went to work with a limb he found. It was a comedy of errors of sorts, watching him try to piñata tangerines out of the tree. But after a bit, he got the hang of it and actually managed to get quite a few to fall. I picked up one. It was on the dry side, but they weren't as sour as I remembered. Overall, I'd call it a success. Thad pulled the axe out of the splitting stump, putting it over his shoulder. Jeff followed behind him as they headed into the woods in search of another swamp cabbage. Jeff was plodding along behind Thad when Thad stopped short, causing Jeff to walk into him. He was just about to go off on him when he looked out past Thad to see a doe standing not 20 yards away. Jeff knelt down and took aim with his AK.
"Wonder if I can hit her," he thought, as he squeezed the trigger, causing Thad to jump. The doe jumped as well and ran off.
"Shit, guess I missed her."
"I was hoping you'd take a shot, but a little warning next time might be nice. You scared the hell out of me. Let's go take a look. Maybe you hit her."
They both searched the area, looking for blood or any other indication that she had been hit. Moving in the direction the doe ran, Jeff called out,
"Over here!"
Thad came over to see a thick, dark blood clot.
"That's good. Let's see if we can follow the trail."
The trail wasn't hard to follow, and they soon found her lying under a palm tree. The round had entered her right shoulder and exited on the left side, taking a substantial piece of rib with it. Thad rolled the deer over, examining the wounds.
"Good shot. For a full metal jacket round, it did a good job."
"I was wondering what it would do. I thought the wound would be a lot smaller."
Thad pointed at the missing section of rib.
"Hitting that bone there really did a number. Let's take her back to the cabin and get her cleaned up."
They each grabbed a front leg and dragged her back to the cabin. Dropping her near the tree line, Thad went to get his knives. On his way back, he asked,
"You ever dress a deer before?"
Jeff shook his head.
"Nope. Never was much of a hunter. I've been missing out. It's fun."
"Well, the real fun's about to start," Thad said as he lifted one of the front legs. "Hold that."
With Jeff holding the leg, Thad slit the belly and set about gutting the deer. He removed the organs, setting the heart and liver aside. Next, he made a cut behind the tendons on the rear legs and stuck a sharpened stick in both sides. He then tied a length of rope to it, and together
he and Jeff hoisted it up into a tree.
"It's a lot easier to work on it this way," Thad said as he hung it.
"I've seen pictures, you know, but it's really neat to see it in person." Thad smiled.
"First time for everything."
He went on to explain to Jeff how to skin the deer. He wanted to save the hide and talked about the process of removing it properly. Thad then discussed the quartering process, showing Jeff how to remove the back strap and tenderloins.
"This here is some of the best meat on a deer," Thad said, holding up a tenderloin.
"I didn't even know that was there."
"You sure don't want to leave it behind. It's really good."
Once the deer was quartered, they moved over to the table and started to cut the meat from the bone, removing every usable piece of meat and dropping it into a clean bucket. When they were done, all that was left was a pile of bones and the spine. The dogs had sat patiently watching the process and were finally rewarded when Thad took an axe and cut the spine into three pieces, tossing one to each of the dogs.
"What about these bones?" Jeff asked.
"We'll save them. I'll boil some of them to make broth, and I'll smoke some for the dogs later."
Jeff looked around.
"Damn, the only thing you threw away is the head."
"We can't afford to waste anything right now. Can you find something to cover the bucket of meat with? I'm going to go throw this to the hogs," Thad said, as he picked up the bucket of guts.
Jeff nodded and headed for the cabin, as Thad moved off toward the pig pen. When he got to the pen, he went to turn off the solar hot wire, but it was already off. Curious, he rounded the corner with cautious steps. He was surprised to find Leanne sitting in the pen, holding a piglet on her lap. She held a pistol in her other hand and was staring at it.
"Hey, girl, what you doing out here?"
She looked up, startled, and dropped the piglet, quickly raising the pistol toward Thad.
"Don't come near me!"
Thad set the bucket down and raised his hands.
Whoa, I'm not coming any closer. I'm right here. What are you doing with that pistol?"
Leanne was shaking, still pointing the pistol.
"You can't stop me. Leave me alone."
"You're right. I can't stop you, but you can't make me leave either."
Thad lowered his hands and slowly knelt down.
"I'm going to sit down here."
"No. Just leave. Leave me alone."
"No, I'm not going to leave you alone. I can't stop you from doing whatever you're going to do, but you're going to listen to me in the meantime," Thad said as he sat down.
Leanne kept the pistol on him but said nothing. Tears ran down her face. For a long time, it was quiet, save for the sound of Leanne sniffling. Thad cleared his throat.
"I know you're upset. And I understand."
Leanne cut him off.
"How can you understand? What do you know?"
She practically spit the words at him.
"Little girl, I know more than you can imagine. Your dad told me you were upset, that you think life as you knew it is gone."
He paused for a moment.
"You don't see any reason to keep going, do you?"
"Why should I? No one cares. Everything is gone forever."
"You think no one cares? You know how much of Mama and Daddy talk about you?"
She didn't say anything, so Thad continued.
"You don't think I can relate? Let me tell you how I can and how I do. Did you know I had a wife and young son?"
She didn't say anything, but lowered the gun into her lap.
"You know why they aren't here with me?"
Leanne slowly shook her head.
"'Cause they're dead."
Thad let that sink in for a minute.
"They were killed by some government man. Some sick, sick men killed my beautiful wife and my son, my baby."
Now tears began to roll down Thad's face.
"I had to dig them out of the house. I found them together, holding on to one another. I had to dig a grave for them. I buried them like I found them, holding each other."
Thad paused to regain his composure as Leanne started to cry even harder.
"After that happened, I was thinking the same thing that you are now, that my life was over.
that there was no sense in going on. I wanted to end it. Thad paused again. After a long silence, Leanne wiped her nose and asked in a quiet voice,
"Why didn't you?"
"Because of them. Because I knew deep down that they wouldn't want me to. I live for them, even though they are dead. You think your life is over, but it's just silly little things from the before you're thinking of. Cell phones, the internet. You're right. Those things are not worth living for."
The last part got her attention, and she looked up at Thad.
"It's your mama and daddy, your sisters. That's what you have to live for. You have any idea what your daddy went through to get home? I mean, really?"
Leanne gave a little shrug. Thad continued,
"You know he almost died? That he was shot in the head?"
She looked stunned.
"There was nothing in this world that could have kept your daddy from getting back to you. He talked about you girls and your mama. He loves you more than you know." She started to sob.
"But it's so different now. I want to go to school. I want my friends back.
And it will all come back. The world didn't end. It..." Thad looked for the right words.
"It's just on pause. Everything is still here. It'll get fixed."
Wiping her nose again, she replied,
"That's what Dad says."
"Of course he does, and he's right. Now think about it for a minute. You do what you're thinking about doing, and you'll never see it. How do you think your parents would feel if you did this? How do you think it would affect them? What about your sisters? You really think no one would care? No one would miss you?"
Thad paused again, letting the words sink in, then added,
"I know I would."
Leanne looked up at him.
"Little Tony and Anita are gone, but I'm here with you and your family now. And you, all of you, are my family now."
Leanne laid the pistol on the ground and picked at the grass.
"Tony and Anita, those were their names?" she asked, looking up.
Thad nodded. They sat quietly for some time. Neither one saying anything. Thad would sit there all day if it came to it. He was determined to get her back to the cabin safely. After some more time, Leanne asked,
"Do you really think it will all come back?"
"I do."
She reached and picked up one of the piglets that had finished nursing. It squealed in complaint, causing the mama pig to look up. Leanne sighed.
"I just want to go home."
"And you will be able to soon. There's things happening right now that will probably let you go home. I know your mom and dad want to take you back to your old neighborhood when things settle down."
She rubbed the piglet for a minute.
"They're going to be mad at me." "Baby girl, the last thing they're going to be is mad."
Thad looked at her intensely.
"But I'll make you a promise."
Leanne looked up.
"This will be our secret. You get to feeling better, don't try this foolishness again, and I won't say nothing."
Again, they sat in silence, then the tears returned to trace paths down her cheeks.
"I don't want to do it, Thad. I want to live. I just get so sad."
"You need to stop sitting around thinking about it. There's lots to do. Get involved. That's why I always like to keep busy. It keeps the sadness away," he smiled.
Setting the piglet down, Leanne sat up straight and wiped her face. She let out a loud breath and stood up. Thad rose as well. Leanne looked at the pistol, then at Thad.
"You want me to leave it here?"
"No, let me have it."
She bent over and picked up the pistol. When he took it, he grabbed her hand in his.
"Thank you, Leanne. You're saving me, too," he said, and smiled.
Leanne began to cry again and wrapped her arms around his big waist. Thad bent down a bit and picked her up, giving her a hug.
"If you ever need to talk to someone, I'm here. You come to me anytime," Thad said as he set her down.
For the first time
in a long time, Leanne smiled. She reached out and took his hand. Thanks, Thad. They walked back to the cabins like that, hand in hand. Chapter 19. Sheffield and Livingston milled about the command center, coffee cups in hand. Sarge was getting his people into place, relieving the DHS personnel. Tabor and his deputy were outside giving orders to their people to assemble. After he was done assigning his men and had checked the situation with Tabor's team, Sarge hopped in the Hummer and drove up to the gate, trying not to spill his coffee. As he pulled up to it, a couple of the guardsmen waved at him.
"Everything all right?" Sarge called out.
One of the guardsmen gave him a thumbs up. Satisfied that was taken care of, he turned back toward the camp to check on Ted and Mike. He found them sitting inside the camp's comm shack. Ted had a headset on, listening to the traffic on the DHS net. Ian was standing outside, making sure no one tried to come in.
"Where are the DHS boys?" Sarge asked.
"We sent them to get their weapons," Mike said.
"They didn't get anything out, did they?"
Ted shook his head.
"Not that we know of. Hell, they were relieved for the help. Gave us their call sign and everything. They bought it. I'm more worried about the civilians. They know something is up, and some of them are causing some trouble."
"What kind of trouble?"
Ted tossed a handheld radio to Sarge.
"Listen in. They're asking questions, and some of the DHS boys are getting rough with them."
Sarge nodded.
"I will, Mike. You stay here. Ted, you come with me."
Sarge and Ted left in the Hummer, leaving Mike and Ian to watch the store. They rode to one of the mess halls, where the security personnel were being grouped. Several of the guardsmen were playing the part of armorers, taking in the weapons that were being checked against an equipment list by one of the DHS supervisors. After the weapons were turned in, they were taken to an empty tent to be disassembled, out of the view of the DHS crew. What they were really doing was removing the firing pins from the weapons to render them all inoperable. Jamie, Doc, and Perez were at the head of the line, taking the weapons in. Sarge dropped Ted off there, instructing him to call on their security radio when all had been disarmed. He then headed back to the command center. Sheffield and Livingston were sitting at a conference table with Tabor and Ed. When Sarge came through the door, Sheffield asked,
"How's it going, First Sergeant?"
Sarge smiled.
"Good, good. They've almost got all your people together."
Then he looked at Tabor.
"Who do you have that you trust to do the interviews?"
Tabor looked at Ed and asked,
"What do you think?"
Ed rubbed his temples and replied,
"Right now, the only people I trust are sitting in this room."
Tabor and Ed didn't see the look Sheffield and Livingston shared. Sarge smiled to himself.
"Well, we don't know your people, but I've got a couple of intel folks who will help you two."
Tabor nodded.
"I appreciate it. We'll take any help you can offer."
"I'll get them rounded up. As soon as your folks are disarmed, we'll start bringing in a few at a time. Let them wait out there, and you can talk to them one at a time."
"Who's going to handle detentions?" Ed asked.
"I'll have a couple of my guys here for security," Livingston said.
He was really starting to warm up to the part he was playing.
"What do y'all do with the detainees brought in here?" Sarge asked.
"We have first contact with refugees. We bring them in and process them into the system. Then they are moved on to other facilities based on their skills and the needs of those facilities," Tabor said.
"We also sort out those who may pose a problem," Ed added.
Sarge cocked his head to the side.
"What do you mean?"
"You know, the sort who resist going along with the program," Tabor said.
"One of our primary missions is to identify those that are deemed a threat to the resurrection of the state. Many of these are the old survivalist types. Constitutionalists, libertarians, gun owners, anarchists. Basically,
anyone that would resist the power of the federal government, Ed said.
We have a country to rebuild. Everyone needs to be on the same page, Tabor said.
Sheffield and Livingston sat stunned from what they heard. These types of things had been rumored, but to hear it from the mouths of those tasked with doing it was something else entirely.
Makes sense to me, Sarge said as he sipped his coffee.
Glad we're on the same page. Most people have a hard time hearing that, but it's necessary if we're to bring this country back.
Ted's voice crackled in Sarge's ear, telling him that all the security people were now contained in the mess hall. Sarge replied with a terse,
Roger that,
and stood up.
Looks like all of your people are in place. I'm going to go over and check on the detention facility. So when we get these rogues identified, we can move them there.
Tabor nodded.
We only have two people on staff at detention. There are four prisoners in there right now, Ed said, then looked at Tabor. That reminds me, we have that execution scheduled for this afternoon.
Execution? Sheffield asked.
Yeah, we have three women in there who worked together to poison one of our people. One of them claimed he raped her, but instead of reporting it to us, they killed him. Since he isn't around to ask, we have to go on what we know. The three of them killed him, Tabor said.
Plus, it's a pretty good message to the rest of the CIs here, Ed said.
CI? What's that? Sheffield asked.
Civilian internees, Sarge said.
Tabor and Ed both looked up.
You've been through training? Tabor asked.
Yes, I have. I know FM 339.40. Before my first deployment to Iraq, my command sent me.
It was interesting, Sarge said with a smile.
We sure could use someone with some experience like yours. You'd be a big help around here, Tabor said.
We'll have to see what our mission is after this one is done, Sarge said.
Well, you're welcome here with open arms, Ed said with a smile.
Sarge smiled back.
I'll keep that in mind.
He jumped in the Hummer and headed over to pick up Ted so they could see these prisoners.
Eric stopped with his hand on the door to the detention center and took a deep breath. He'd put on body armor just to be prepared and run his head through the plan once more. But he could never have prepared himself for the scene he was met with when he opened the door. He threw the door open to see a bare ass, the owner of which was bent over, pulling his pants down. Two slender, naked legs were on either side of him.
Eric, shut the door, man! Cortez shouted.
He was holding a woman by the arms. It took Eric a moment to recognize who it was. Fred looked back at him with pleading eyes. Eric stepped forward, letting the door shut. In a flash, he drew his Glock and shot Hamner in the side of the head. He dropped like a stone.
What the fuck?
Cortez shouted, letting go of Fred. Fred jumped from the desk and grabbed a chair sitting in front of it, raising it quickly and smashing it over Cortez's head. The blow knocked him to the ground as the chair shattered. Still naked, Fred dropped on top of him and started beating his head in with a chair leg. Eric stood and watched. He'd wanted to do just what she was doing now, but he wasn't about to try and stop her. The entire time she shouted unintelligibly, swinging the chair leg again and again. When it was obvious Cortez was dead, Eric finally moved to pull her off, grabbing her under her arms and dragging her away from him. She fought him, clawing and kicking at the body. When Eric finally managed to pull her off, she collapsed into sobs. Covered in blood, she went limp in his arms and cried. Eric looked around for something to clean her off with and picked up the smock she'd been wearing. He wiped blood from her face and neck as tears rolled down her face. Eric wanted to say something, but didn't have the words. After cleaning her off, Fred pushed her hair from her face and got dressed. She looked at Eric.
Quick, let's find the keys so we can let the rest out.
Are you all right? Fred was in shock, but functional for the moment.
Yeah, let's find those keys,
she said, grabbing his hand. Fred inched forward, her body obviously in pain.
Keys! Can we find the keys?
Fred!
Fred, what's going on?
Jess shouted.
I'm coming to get you! Hang on!
Eric ran toward the door and flipped the light switch. Fred let out a cry.
My eyes! Oh my God! The light hurts! Turn it off! Turn it off!
Fred cried. Eric flipped the lights off, then fumbled through his pockets for his flashlight. Flashlight in hand, he ran back to Fred.
Are you all right?
Fred was hunched over.
The light hurts so bad.
Tears were running down her face.
I'm so sorry, Fred. I'm sorry I didn't even think about that, Eric said.
Fred wiped her face.
Let's get them out. What happened to the guards?
Calvin hollered, clutching his ribs in pain.
They're dead, Fred said.
Calvin, Shane, and Jess all started to ask questions, frantically pleading for Eric and Fred to get them out, quickly. Shane and Jess were both at their doors, the thought of getting out almost too much to take. Eric found the keys on Cortez's belt and removed them. Fred quickly took them and the small flashlight and ran to Jess's cell, freeing her. Jess jumped out and wrapped Fred in a bear hug, eyes closed. She couldn't look in the direction of the entry. The light streaming through the open door burned her eyes.
Come on, let's check on Mary, Fred said, as she pulled away.
They ran to the last cell and opened the door. Mary was lying on the floor, motionless. They fell to their knees and turned her over. She didn't respond.
Is she dead?
Fred asked. Jess felt for a pulse.
She has a pulse. Let's get her out of here. Eric, come help us, Fred called out.
Let me out of this damn cell,
Shane screamed, banging on the door. Eric ran into the cell and picked up the limp Mary, carrying her out to the desk, where there was only a small amount of light. After setting her down, he took the keys and went to the door. Sticking his head out, he saw Kay and waved at her to come. Ducking back in, Eric went to the cell where Shane was still shouting and kicking the door. When the door swung open, Shane wasn't expecting what he saw. In the faint light coming through the entry door stood a DHS member in full uniform. He froze, unsure of what to do next.
It's all right, man. Come on out, Eric said.
Shane stuck his head out of his cell and looked toward the entry, where he saw Jess and Fred kneeling over Mary. Taking a second glance at Eric, he slid out between him and the door, pressing himself flat so they didn't touch. Shane pointed to Calvin's cell.
Open that one and help me get him out.
Eric quickly opened the door and Shane hobbled in, kneeling down beside his dad.
Hey, old dude, how are you?
If they'd broken one more, it'd be just like I like it, Calvin said,
forcing a smile as Shane and Eric helped him up.
Can you move?
Depends. Are we getting the hell out of here?
Shane shook his head.
I don't know. Come on.
He helped his father to his feet and out of the cell. They stepped out into the corridor as Eric ran back to where the girls were. Down the hall, Kay came through the door and immediately stopped. Before her were the bodies of Cortez and Hamner. Jess and Fred were kneeling beside Mary. Kay ran toward them and dropped to her knees, wrapping her arms around Jess.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you girls,
she cried into Jess's hair. Jess was surprised by the sudden appearance of Kay.
What are you doing here?
She looked at Eric.
And what is he doing here? What the hell is going on?
Fred looked at Jess. I told you he was a good guy.
He's getting you out. We're gonna make a run for it, Kay said.
Jess and Fred both looked at her, but neither said anything. Fred turned back to Mary and gently slapped the side of her face.
Mary, wake up! Wake up! It's okay now! Wake up!
What's wrong with her? Kay asked.
It wasn't easy in here. We were kept in the dark the whole time. They would shine bright lights in our faces and play music really loud for a long time, Jess said, sounding frantic.
Oh, was all she could say in reply. She then quickly looked at Eric. We need to get out of here, now. Sarge drove across the camp, keeping an eye out for anyone in a DHS uniform. All he saw were guardsmen in ACU digital, which was reassuring.
These DHS idiots are out of their fucking minds, Sarge said.
Ted had his arm propped on the edge of the door.
Yeah? How so?
Sarge looked over.
What they're doing here is fucking nuts. They're sorting people and using them for labor, and they also have categories of people they are segregating, basically saying they are undesirables.
Ted looked over with raised eyebrows.
Really? It's kind of crazy. What are they doing with them?
As Sarge pulled up in front of the detention center, he shut the truck down.
I don't know, but I intend to find out.
Ted looked over as he opened the door.
Good idea. There's something suspicious going on here.
They walked to the door, Sarge in the lead. He stopped and asked,
You remember those speeches the president made before the election about transforming the country? You think it has something to do with the Oval Office? He can't be reelected, though, so why do this, if he's the one behind it? Maybe he likes the furniture in the White House and doesn't want to leave, Sarge said, as he grabbed the doorknob.
What lay behind the door was totally confusing. Two cold bodies lay on the floor, one of which had its pants around its ankles. There were four women off to one side, one lying in the ground, with the other three kneeling beside her. Sarge took the scene in an instant. He also saw the other man in a DHS uniform, staring at Sarge with a look akin to someone who just saw an alien or Sasquatch.
What the fuck is going on in here?
Sarge said, in a tone only an Army First Sergeant could muster. Every face swiveled toward him. Eric was petrified. Thinking he was caught in the act of killing two men, he quickly drew his pistol. Sarge saw the movement, but action is always faster than reaction. Jess caught the movement out of the corner of her eye and knew immediately what was about to happen. She started to rise and screamed,
No!
Eric's pistol cracked. At the same instant, Sarge grunted and fell to the ground. Ted grabbed Sarge's shoulder and pulled him back out the door. At the same moment, he raised his carbine and flipped the selector switch to full auto. Fred screeched,
Don't shoot!
But it was too late. Ted fired a burst, and Eric crumpled and collapsed. Ted stepped over the old man, gripping the foregrip of the rifle and moving quickly toward the downed man in the black uniform. Then something he hadn't expected happened.
Ted! Ted, don't shoot! Stop! Stop!
At the mention of his name, Ted swiveled around. It was then he realized who had called his name. Jess.
Don't shoot him, Ted! He let us out! Don't shoot!
Jess shouted again. Ted lowered the weapon.
Jess?
Yeah, it's me, she said,
as tears again began to run down her face. Ted looked back at Sarge. He was lying just outside the door, stuffing a dressing into his wound and cussing a storm. Jess and Ted both moved toward him. Ted fell to his knees.
How bad is it?
He asked frantically as he ripped open Sarge's IFAC. Jess dropped to her knees and wrapped her arms around Sarge's neck.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I can't believe you're here.
She began to cry.
I thought about you all the time. I prayed you'd come, and here you are.
She was crying uncontrollably. Sarge patted her on the head.
It's all right, Annie. You don't think I could leave you here, do you?
Jess smiled at the mention of the nickname he had given her what seemed like years ago.
Jess, move out of the way, please. I need to wrap this up.
Ted looked at Sarge.
How do you feel?
Sarge was leaning on one elbow, gritting his teeth.
Well, it ain't good.
Sarge looked over at Eric.
What about that little shit? Is he dead?
Jess looked over to see Fred kneeling beside Eric. Fred was crying and trying to stop the bleeding from Eric's right bicep. He was having a difficult time breathing, heaving slowly. Three of the four rounds hit the ceramic plate in his armor, and the fourth created a through-and-through wound in his arm.
Eric, hang on! Fred cried. We'll get help for you!
Sarge groaned, and then cursed. The bullet had struck him in his left side, where his leg met his hip. Ted helped him get the dressing on it and the bleeding under control.
We're going to have to get you to a doctor, Ted said.
No shit!
Don't look like it hit the artery, though, Sarge replied.
Hopefully. Let's get you up and into the Hummer.
Don't worry about me. Check on his ass.
Sarge jutted his chin toward Eric.
Jess said he was helping them?
Yeah, she said he'd let them out.
Check on him. See if he's gonna make it.
Sarge looked down at his blood-stained pants.
Damn it! These were my best pants!
Ted chuckled.
They quit leaking all over them. You're lucky he didn't shoot your dick off.
Ted moved over to Eric. When he knelt down, Eric looked at him, unsure of what was going on. Ted glanced into his eyes for a moment, then picked up the Glock and shoved it into a cargo pocket.
Do you have an IFAC?
Ted asked, as he started to cut the sleeve of Eric's blouse. Eric was going into shock. All he could manage was to shake his head no. Going against all the rules of using your personal first aid kit, Ted pulled a dressing from his own, wrapping it around Eric's arm.
He's going to be all right. Elevate his feet to prevent shock. The dressing will stop the bleeding.
In a surreal moment, Fred grabbed Eric's legs, lifted them up, and swung them over the top of Cortez's body, setting them on the dead man's chest. Calvin and Shane were standing there, stunned as the scene unfolded before them. Shane helped his father over to where Sarge was now leaning against the door.
"I'd like to say I'm glad to see you, but this turned into a hell of a clusterfuck," Calvin said, shielding his eyes with his hands. Sarge looked up.
"I agree, Calvin. Our first meeting was a little better. You look like shit."
"You don't look so good yourself," he laughed.
"So what happened? They put the boot to you?"
Calvin rubbed his side.
"You could say that. They grabbed us right after our meeting with you."
Sarge nodded.
"I know, we saw it. I'm sorry we couldn't help."
"Damn sure wish you had, but I understand why you didn't. What are you doing here?"
Sarge smiled.
"We just took control of the camp."
Calvin let out a small laugh, then grimaced and grabbed his side.
"Well, no shit."
"No shit,"
Sarge replied with a smile.
"I didn't hear any shooting," Shane said.
"We hadn't fired a shot till now."
Ted then appeared and helped Sarge up out of the building and toward the truck. Calvin and Shane also made their way out of the detention center behind them, moving slowly and methodically. Just as Sarge sat down in the passenger seat, two Hummers came racing toward them.
"Damn it," Ted groaned. "What are we going to do about this?"
Sarge shifted in the seat, trying to raise the wounded leg.
"Let's see who shows up."
The two trucks slid to a stop. Livingston, Sheffield, Ed, and Tabor stepped out of the lead truck. A group of guardsmen piled out of the second.
"What the hell happened up here?" Tabor said.
Sarge saw an opportunity and quickly started to seize it.
"I think we found some of your insurgents."
Tabor looked at the open door, then back at Sarge.
"Are you all right?"
"They put up a little bit of a fight, but we took them out."
Sheffield and Livingston stepped forward.
"How bad is it?" Livingston asked.
"Does it look any kind of good to you?"
Sarge asked, the pain beginning to make him even more cantankerous. Livingston looked at Tabor.
"You got a clinic here?"
"We do. Let's get you over there," Ed said.
He did a double take, noticing Calvin and Shane.
"Why are these prisoners out of their cells?" he demanded.
"We took them out to interrogate them. They aren't going anywhere."
"Can you go see if you recognize the asshole who shot me?"
Sarge asked, gesturing toward the door. Ed and Tabor nodded and moved toward the door, and Sarge quickly motioned for Ted. He waited until the other two men stepped through the door.
"Put those two in one of them cells. Take some of these guys with you and lock their asses up."
Ted nodded and waved at the guardsmen, who ran over and followed Ted toward the door. When Ed and Tabor stepped through the door, they stopped in their tracks, shocked by the scene. Two of their men were dead, another was wounded, and the prisoners were all out of their cells.
"What the hell is going on here?" Tabor yelled.
Fred and Jess both let out an audible gasp.
"Kay, what the hell are you doing in here?"
Tabor asked. The look in her face was one of complete fright. Ed stepped past Tabor and got in Ted's face.
"What in the hell is going on in here? Why are these prisoners out?"
The four guardsmen rushed by and took Tabor to the ground, pushing him inside a cell. Then, Ted planted a knee into Ed's crotch, dropping the man. Ted bent over and stripped the pistol from Ed's belt, tucking it into a cargo pocket. Curled in a fetal position, holding on to his manhood, Ed looked up at Ted and moaned.
"What the fuck was that for?"
Ted grabbed him by his shirt and pulled him up, pushing him through the cell door. Inside, Tabor was trying to fight the four guardsmen holding him down. One of the guardsmen stood up and brought the butt of his rifle down on Tabor's sternum several times.
"Go to sleep!"
the guardsman shouted. The blows knocked the air from Tabor's lungs. He immediately went limp, exhaling a forceful groan. With Tabor subdued, the soldiers dragged him to the cell Ed was in. Ed looked down at his boss, then back at Ted.
"What the fuck is this about? Why in the hell are you doing this?"
"You bastards are getting what you deserve, or at least you probably will later," Ted spat.
"What we deserve? What the hell have we done? We run a refugee camp for Pete's sake."
Ted pointed at Ed's face.
"That's the first time you've used the term refugee. They've always been prisoners or detainees, but now that your ass is in the fucking sling, you're singing a different tune. That's why you're in here," Ted said, slamming the door.
He made his way to the door, ordering the guardsmen to help assist the ladies out of the center. In their weakened condition, it was difficult for them to walk normally. Outside, Sheffield and Livingston were standing beside the Hummer, talking to Sarge.
"Just got word they've got the DHS boys all herded together, and the situation has been explained to them. The jig is officially up now," Livingston said.
"Good. They got them all? Any trouble?"
Sarge asked.
"Yeah, there was a little trouble, but they didn't have to shoot anyone. A couple of them took a bit of a beating, though. Guess some of the guys were a little wound up."
"A little beating's good for 'em. God knows they've been inflicting it on others," Sarge said.
"We need to do something with the civilians. They're scared now that they know there are no guards around. We need to make an announcement to let them know what's happening," Livingston said.
"I agree. But we also need to maintain the camp as it currently is until we can determine who's who. Then we can make an announcement," Sarge said. He groaned loudly and clutched his hip.
Sheffield shook his head.
"We need to get you over to the infirmary."
"Teddy!"
Sarge yelled.
"Yeah?" "Hurry up! I've only got so much of this red shit in me."
"Go ahead and take him, Ted. We'll take care of the situation and post a couple of our guys for security to deal with these bodies," Livingston said.
Ted looked back at Jess and Fred, who were still with Eric, eyes averted.
"He needs to go to the infirmary, too. So does that other woman."
Livingston ordered the guardsmen to help Eric and Mary into the truck. Ted helped the girls up, wedging them into the back of the Hummer.
"Ted, we need sunglasses or something. The light hurts our eyes," Jess said.
"We'll find something for you. As soon as we get to the infirmary. Speaking of which,"
he keyed his mic.
"Hey, Doc."
"Go ahead, Ted."
"Get to the infirmary. The old man's been hit."
Before Doc could reply, Mike broke in.
"Is he all right? How bad is it?"
Doc came back.
"Ted, I'm on my way. Is he stable?"
"Yeah, he's stable and cantankerous as hell."
"Roger that. I'll be waiting."
"I'm on my way too," Mike said.
Sheffield and Livingston were discussing how many men to leave behind when they noticed that Shane and Calvin were staring at them.
"Sorry to interrupt, fellas, but what are we supposed to do now?" Calvin asked.
Livingston looked at the man, who was bent over and couldn't stand straight.
"Who are you, and what the hell happened to you?"
Calvin stabbed a finger at the retreating Hummer.
"We were captured right after a meeting with them. My name's Calvin Long. This is my son, Shane."
"So what happened to you, Calvin?"
"We put up a fight, but there was too many of them. When we got here, they put the boot leather to me."
Calvin looked at Shane,
"and done worse to him."
"Why'd they come after you?" Sheffield asked. Calvin thought about the answer.
"We were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They saw us and started shooting when we pulled away from the meeting."
"You know the old saying, roads are for people who want to be ambushed," Livingston said.
"Truer now than ever before, I guess," Calvin said.
"Why were you out on the road?" Livingston asked.
"We found a guy who escaped from here, and from how he described it, the conditions were awful. I had a feeling that Sarge's crew was in the area for a reason, and this camp was the only reason I could think of. I reached out to them, and we met up to give them some intel we had on the camp layout. Then, we got ambushed."